mother's Tai Chi. The rest of the kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's saying in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around.
Ayo's house.
In the middle of our street.
Ayo's house.
Isle's House, season's over. We're here to talk about it. Ethan, Jack, Rocco. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at EthanGSN, Jack at Isle's Den, Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. Follow the podcast page at Isle's House. Subscribe where you get your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Spotify. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. We are, of course, sponsored by the fine folks at the Rust and Gold. Hit them up in Huntington if you want a great place for food and drinks. By the way, I'm sure we'll get into it. I had a phenomenal dinner last night. I'll save it for later. QR code. In the top right, I'm rocking the Casa hat. Rocco's rocking the Casa hat. Jack is rocking the Isle's House hat. Proud of you, buddy. Took a marketing class. We're back.
Yes, sir.
Patreon, down below, patreon.com/Isle's House. Wrapping up the final, well, not the final, but final meaningful game day chat tonight. If you want access to the Discord, $5 a month gets you in, $25 for the insider tier. It's well worth it. Check it out. All right. Before we get into all the negativity that I'm sure will be spewed on this podcast, there is one person who deserves a very big congratulations for their accomplishments. That, of course, is Chris Lamoriello. Congratulations to the Bridgeport Islanders for making the playoffs. So congratulations, Chris. Let's give a round of applause for Chris. Great job, Chris. Thank you. All right. Rocco, you were at the game tonight.
I was.
Would you like to kick us off?
Yeah, that sucked. honestly, early on, sort of a boring game. And then typical Isles fashion as of late, just get that blow-up period. And you just have waves and waves and waves of Habs fans there cheering. Rightfully so. I mean, they have a sick young team. Credit where it's due. Fun team, good team. Potential team that could go on a run this year. They're cheering, having fun. We're all miserable. We're in the. I had the pleasure of sitting next to our guy Lupo and Ryan. Both.
Oh, nice.
305 was with us in the Heineken Terrace. Our other guy Tyler was there. Good time with those boys, but it was just like a all-around vent sesh. Really, after each intermission, we're just like, man, like, how are they going to fix this team this year? Like, we have Schaefer, but what else? How do you go forward? It's just, it's so frustrating, and you just. Even as recent as today, you have people justifying a lot of things that went on at this deadline and with this team. And I think you just – the main thing I'm hoping for in this offseason is that the GM, who let's not beat around the bush, who made some mistakes at this deadline. He made some mistakes. I'm hoping to – I know Ethan's going to go off even further shortly, but, you know, swallow some pride and admit that. This offseason and fix this, because you still, you know, you have obviously one of the best young players in the league in Schaefer, some good prospects coming up, maybe not super prospects put around him, but there's a lot of guys, like, I mean, throughout the game, I think we named 6 or 7 guys that were like, yeah, he could go, this guy could go. This roster needs a lot of work, and they just got to get to it ASAP, because you got to take steps in the right direction. It was not a fun night being in the building. I always appreciate going because I don't get the chance too often. And it was nice being with one of my friends in Ryan, who I don't get to see often. But it's like, man, the product on the ice tonight was brutal.
This
didn't start playing until the third period. They had to be down 3-0.
So my reaction mid-breakdown, Rocco. It's like the GM makes 3 individual horrible moves in real time. Like, we all saw it. We all called it out. And it's like, there's people who are just like, no, they're not bad moves. And then 1-7 in their last 8 games, it's the goalposts moving from, it's not bad moves. Hopefully the GM can just learn from his mistakes. What gives you the confidence that he is going to do so?
Also, and I think we've said this on this pod, to be fair, if Lou Lamoriello made those moves, he would be getting shredded.
And the thing is, Lou would never make these moves.
He would have made – I wouldn't say that, but
– no, he wouldn't have made these moves.
He wouldn't. He certainly wouldn't have made the Palat one because he's never the type to take on Cap for in exchange for picks like that type of deal. But I could have seen him
make
an esque deal. But it's just again, like, and then we get the label as being negative, and look where it ends up. It's just they weren't good. They weren't good.
Jack and I were talking pre-show before you hopped on here. What was the line, Jack?
I forget because we spoke about a lot.
Something along the lines of like, I hate that we were right.
Yeah.
We do. We all do. And we're not, and it's so funny too because we could go back and look at all the tweets. Like things people would do to us, like go back and look at old tweets and then go dunk on us, whatever. We could do that tenfold right now, but I don't fucking do it because I'm honestly livid. Like leaving that
game,
I was like, we're venting to each other on the walk back to the Emerald lot. Just like, this fucking sucks. I can't believe they didn't make it. It's so frustrating. I have a really hard time not.
But it's like people want to go about, and this is like the last like woe is me esque thing I'll try to say. But it's like you're just negative, and like now you're rooting against them because you want to be right. I promise you, I do not want to spend thousands of dollars, hours of my life, afternoons on fucking Saturdays where it's 60 degrees and not a cloud in the sky to hop on this podcast or on my phone at 10:30 Eastern and say, see guys, look at all that time and money I wasted. I was right. Fuck off.
Look, tonight reminded me of a game I went to when I was way younger and the Islanders had Bergenheim and Franz Nielsen. I only remember this game because of the Habs fans that were in attendance and they were trying to clinch a playoff spot that night. Well. And I just remember them taking over the entire Coliseum. The Islanders were pretty starving for attendance at that time. The tickets were so cheap and the Islanders won the game and like we were happy and everything. But I remember my dad telling me one day it won't be like this where you'll have the other team's fans just controlling the entire atmosphere. And hearing what I heard through the TV tonight, in the season that we have had, the ups that they have had this year, to see it end like this, it's just, it really blows me away. I have not seen a team collapse like this at all. The Jets aren't good enough to collapse.
And so, honestly, Jack, there were a good amount of Islander fans too, but like the vibe, as you guys know, usually when you go into the Heineken Terrace, there's like this long ass line. If you don't get there right away and you're waiting to get in there, there was no line tonight. Like the vibes just weren't great. Like I think I'm sure on paper it was a sellout. Like I'm sure they sold all the seats and there were most of the seats were filled.
You mean to tell me, Rocco, that no one on a Sunday night when the Islanders are all but eliminated wanted to smoke weed and fist pump to Avicii with Sparky and Niles?
This could have been, even when I bought the I got these tickets like 3-4 days ago. Like even then you thought the vibes would have been pretty good, but just, they did this all to themselves, and that's the most frustrating part. There were winnable games down the stretch. You look at Chicago. You look at the game against Ottawa where you lost last second and couldn't collect a point. There's just so many games where they just left points on the table, and it sucks, man. It really does. We do this pod once a week the entire season, and I feel like it's been positive vibes for the most part, just about the whole year. And having to get
until
on here
– until the deadline.
Yeah, and having to get on here tonight and just be like, yeah, the season's over, and we're going to pick like – 13, 14, 15, and we bought at the deadline and don't have many picks after 13, 14, 15, wherever we end up selecting is – it just fucking sucks, man. There's
you know how we could have gotten top 10?
Yeah, I know. But and it's funny too because I remember going in saying – literally, I said this myself. This team can't hurt me this year. Either they're going to be fun because they have young guys, and either they – have Schaefer and they're this ascending team that's going to sell off and get more parts, or they're going to surprise us and make the playoffs. Guess what? They still made me mad. So everything went against the plan. It just fucking.
Yeah. And, you know, just watching this team over the last 2 weeks, they have won two games and they have beaten the Florida Panthers, who dressed one NHL caliber forward line, and they beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. Every team they faced that was competent, they completely fell apart. You know what the most depressing part for me was, though? Yesterday against Ottawa, they didn't allow one goal at 5-on-5. They were coached well. They got 8 power plays. They held the Senators, one of the hottest teams, one of the best teams in the NHL, to 16 shots on goal, and they still lost the game. And it's like, these guys, Barzal, he's paid $9.1 million a year. Horvat's 8.5. Those guys have given you 70 points, 30 goals. Schaefer's given you a generational season. Sorokin's given you a freaking Vezina season. Pelech's given you a great season defensively. To have all of these things go right and to still come up this short where the end of your season, there's Habs fans filling up your building, it's like, this team is kind of, this team's pretty far away. And that's where my frustration really comes in, is like, there are still fans defending this Braden Schenn trade.
And Jack, at least he's trying.
The thing is, man, I didn't like this trade from the start, but I was willing to give it a chance. And the reality is, they traded for Braden Schenn because Barzal and Horvat were playing together at that time, and they were winning hockey games. When Schenn came, they wanted him to center the second line. That's not Braden Schenn's fault, honestly. That is misevaluating this player at his stage of his career. And here we are, where a new coach comes in. Schenn is already on the wing, looking better on the wing. But the point is, Barzal and Horvat, they gave you everything they had. And at the end, they still had to carry everything, even after adding $15 million worth of players. Well, so
a lot of dead weight amongst that $15 million. We've said on this pod many times, it's not simply the Schenn trade and who Schenn is as a player. It's the process behind the trades and where you thought this team was. Someone posted it today. I forget who it was, like the interview right after the deadline, where Darsh was like, yeah, if we were like 3 or 4 points out of the playoffs, we wouldn't be making this deal. We're just doing it because we're comfortably in and we want reinforcements, or something to that effect. So clearly this team made you believe. And you were fooled.
And one more thing. Actually, continue on.
No, I was basically done. But it's just the fact, like, I think we all sort of knew that it was a somewhat fugazi run. Like, they were all playing above their heads for a little bit, or at least the main parts were. And I agree. Like, I can't look at this year and be like, Horvat and Barzal didn't have great years or whatever else. It's just the depth beyond that. Even yep. – I think Ethan said it either on Twitter or in our group chat. Like, a guy like Ryan Pulock clearly should not be playing, but we don't have the depth to let him sit for a couple games. We're top heavy, and the top is an elite. That's really how I would describe this team.
Whatever. Drop this nugget. Like, Ryan Pulock's been battling a knee injury since that time he missed a few games. And
weeks.
After the season, it will come out the significance of it, and my understanding is that it's at the least a moderate to like debilitating knee injury.
I mean, there was a play.
He can't skate.
There was a play.
He's not the fleetest of foot to begin with, but like, you see guys beat him now, and I almost watch him and feel bad. Like,
he's looking like Susie getting beat around the outside.
He can't move.
Yeah,
he can't move. He shouldn't be playing.
Speaking of Carson Susie, so. The Islanders were playing the Predators in late January, and the game was tied at 3 with a minute left. They were 4-on-4. Carson Soucy was on the ice. They lose the puck ends up in their zone. May or may not have been because of him, but the puck ends up in the back of their net, and they lose the game. Tonight, this dude is pinching egregiously. Yesterday, he takes a penalty as they're trying to come back in a 1-0 game that leads to the 5-on-3. He completely screwed up a play in Buffalo with 5 minutes left that cost him 2 points. I have to say, with this player, considering he came from the New York Rangers, this guy is just going to have the worst Islanders legacy I have ever seen. When anyone thinks of that player, they are just going to think about how this season ended. And my God, the stubbornness the entire time to not take this guy out of the lineup, it cost him big time. And like, that's the player. He was on the ice for 20 goals against and 10-4. He was so, so bad. And it just sucks. Like, it didn't need to be like this. And we kept forcing him in. And we doubled and tripled down from Susie to Palat all the way to Schenn. All three of these guys just didn't push this team forward. if anything, they all set them back because not a single one of them is even close to goals for and goals against on the ice with their differentials. And just want to say, like, I haven't been the biggest analytics guy historically, but the analytics and data were literally all over this team the entire season, kind of saying like, yeah, they have a good record. Sorokin's having a great season, but we're not going to put their playoff odds at 75-80% when they're 6 points above the cut line. Like, I'm telling you, man, like, this team could fall apart, and they fell apart. And it's kind of eye-opening to me the amount that the data and the analytical side was correct on this team and how it is reflected in the guys that we have added. It's matching everything my eyes tell me.
Well, we almost held out long enough that we beat all the, like, we made it 90-95% of the way through and almost beat the charts, if you would say.
But almost.
Literally that they just, not only did they lose, they played so poorly. I mean, there were so many boring hockey games that we just can't score a goal. Like, how uneventful on our end was that Ottawa game yesterday? It was like,
well, listen, water was always going to find its level, be it now or in round one, because I mean, they probably get smashed.
The way we were playing, honestly, and believe me, I wanted to make the playoffs this whole time.
Same. But
I almost think this is better long term, because now the GM can't say, like, I believe in these guys, this is the right group. You have to make changes.
But it's after we all acknowledge that there's not an easy path to a turnaround here.
No, there's not. But at the same time, if they made the playoffs and they lost like a series in six or whatever, I could see them being like, now we're going to go out and make the big move. We're trading the 16th overall pick. We're going to try to add one more forward. They're not ready for that.
No.
They are multiple pieces away. And when I say multiple, I think like four or five.
At least. And again, it's like they played two playoff teams back to back. They lost 7-1. With Braden Shen on the roster, they're playing at a 73 point full season pace. This is not a good team. And like, I'm getting fucking dunked on Twitter about my take about, like, they have a very, like, clear path to being unwatchable next year. You saw it. Like, these last two weeks, this team is unwatchable.
I just wanted to pull up this one from Isles Hub. Honestly, Bridgeport just clinched the playoffs tonight.
Let them stay.
Even in Eklund, I'm like one of the biggest Eklund fans. I think you leave him down there. Like, yeah. let him cook down there. There's nothing to provide up here at this point.
You know what?
One game. So, like, just let him play in Bridgeport.
And enough of all of this bullshit, too. I know if he comes up, and I know everyone's going to be super excited, and it's just like the post game is going to be all about how we have this amazing, great future, and this is all that any of us should be focused on. It's like, nah, dude. Like, for once, just, like, let the facts really hit. Where, you know, we hire a new coach 4 days ago, which, you know, I've had some time to think about this. I don't think the process in which the head coach was hired was correct. You have a generational talent on your hands. I'm sorry, but that there needs to be multiple candidates interviewed for a head coaching job of this magnitude.
Here's the thing, Jack, real quick. I've been thinking about this a lot. From DeBoer's perspective, it makes very little sense to me.
That's what surprises me too.
Like, third highest paid coach in the national.
I get it, but you're telling me like I get it. MLSE is cutting costs, but like Toronto is not going to try to beat out the Islanders for DeBoer services. Like, there's no other team that's going to make him a second.
I not wanting Toronto at the same time.
But I'm just saying, like, if it's about the money, like, surely there's someone else.
Did you hear what Elliot said?
What?
He's the third highest paid coach.
Okay. I don't think that's crazy.
We went that far.
I don't think it's crazy given his success and his track record, but it's like, you look at how they've performed these last two games. This is probably who they are to an extent. And I just think that a guy who's had so much success looks at Schaefer and probably just like looks at, oh, you know, Horvat, Barzell, cool. Like, I can work with this. And his hubris takes over and he's probably now wondering, like, oh, fuck. Like,
well, to play devil's advocate, Ethan, could it be that he feels because of where they are and they do have this young talent that at the very least he'll be given the entirety of his deal to make it work. You know what I'm saying? Like if he goes to a win now team, if he goes, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like if he goes to the Devils and things go south, he could easily be out of there year two. Like, is he pretty much guaranteed to be here 3-4 years?
How much longer does the guy want to coach? He's 57.
I mean, I don't think that's that old for the coaching world. Is it?
It feels up there.
I don't know. Maybe it is, but I see him coach. He seems like a lifer. Like he's a hockey psycho to me. I think he's just going to be there forever, but I couldn't tell you exactly, but that's kind of the gist I'm getting. I think he's going to get a lot of say in some changes. I think maybe the benefit of getting these couple games.
He was hired as de facto GM, I think.
That's what I'm saying. Like I could see him coming in these last four games and being like, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, out. They don't work for me.
Yeah.
Because he has to be thinking that right now. You watch these games and listen, is it fair to all these players to expect them to just change the structure completely that they've been playing this whole season? Of course not. It's not going to happen overnight. But clearly there's guys that probably won't fit the system he's trying to play. And clearly the moves Darche made at the deadline were very anti-Waz system. He grabbed slow and old players with a coach that was trying to get faster. So they never made sense for Waz system.
Yes, so, and before you could ask those questions, the head coach was fired because what we are witnessing is a general manager just controlling the narrative around everything.
Like that. At the same time, Jack, we also said on the last episode or whenever we went on when DeBoer got the gig, now this is on Dar. Like, Watt could have kind of been his out in the short term. We're like, oh, well, he's not my coach. He's not my guy. You accelerated this whole thing. Like, now you are directly tied to DeBoer. Like, to me, it's going to be kind of like what's going on in New Jersey now. If it's not going well, Fitz and Keith, both out, it's going to be the same way here if things don't work out quickly. Like, they're both going to go together if it doesn't work.
I mean, do you guys agree with my Watt take?
What?
The one about the offense, defense?
Go ahead.
Elaborate.
Because no one's following the Discord particularly closely or my Twitter.
Oh, yes.
I thought you said, can I give a hot take?
No. Said, do you agree with my Watt take?
Your Watt take that the crackhead hockey one that you needed today?
Yeah.
I have to read it again because I was
– It basically says you can try to play structured hockey with this roster all that you want, but at the end of the day, you're going to just lose games 3-0 instead of 5-4, and it's 1-0.
The common denominator is the roster. The roster's not good enough, and we didn't add players who are good enough. And you still have people that defend a lot of these moves. And listen, you're entitled to your opinion. But I just think it's crazy that we constantly have these arguments, coaches, GMs, what have you. It's the players, man. This roster's not good enough. It hasn't been good enough.
Casper, patreon.com/Isles House. Sign up. You get access to the Discord.
The thing that bothers me, though, is like the amount of like misperception around this entire thing. Like a lot of these moves were seen as bold and like brave. Like I find them to be reckless. Like I think a lot of the decisions they've made over the last several months have been reckless. Like you did well with the Noah Dobson trade, but
and that was it.
Before you have to answer questions about Jonathan Drouin, he's thrown away. Before you have to answer questions about these deadline ads, the coach is thrown away. It's like, we just keep on doing shit. And honestly, the reason why I keep bringing this up is because this offseason does scare me a little bit. And I really hope that DeBoer does have a say of what they should do with this roster moving forward. Because based on my feeling, I just feel like Darche would not hesitate to move some of the players on this team that do make them watchable. And the what I call recklessness, I'm just nervous that's going to carry into the offseason when we're talking about a GM that needs to learn from what he's done. It scares me, man. Jack, it really does.
Let's go beyond in what you're saying. Certain guys that are watchable, you could see him moving. Which ones?
I genuinely think that he is going to try and trade Barzal this offseason. I really do. And
Barzal, Horvat are going to be off the table, personally.
I hope so, but you know, they keep on talking about this, about,
but who's talking? Fans more so than
it's not fans. Fans. It's fans. Don't let them get in your head, Jackie.
Now, I don't know, man. When the GM is
named Pelik, I could see that. And I listen.
I would trade Pelik in a heartbeat.
Pelik is a good player, and he had a high quality season. But I think we have to keep in mind with how we felt on Pelik 2-3 years ago, and how we were so worried about the injury, and we basically were saying we would have given him away if someone just took it. Now he has a good year
and a healthy year,
and a healthy year, and you could potentially sell high. I constantly say that was my main issue with Lou and his tenure here, was not knowing when to sell, not knowing when to sell high on guys, buying off outlier years for certain players. Like, that was part of the issue with his tenure, at least in my opinion. And if you could sort of reverse that here and sell high on Pelik, I think that would be a shrewd move by Darcy.
Yeah, Lou never once sold the top.
Hold on.
I don't think he ever sold at all anyway. So unless it was a cap dump to make room for someone else.
When DeBoer got the job and when he was hired, I've heard him talk about some players specifically and what he's talking about, what he sees in this roster. I have not heard him mention Barzal's name. Darsh, the only time I've really heard him talk about Barzal this season was when he was late to the practice or something and he got healthy, scratched for a game. I remember Wob benching Barzal in that third period, and he was benched along with two players that I don't believe are part of the long term, are part of the future for this team, both Lee and Duclair. So there's just little signs. Then you also hear about the reporter. There's been multiple instances where reporters have shared this season that they have heard Barzal talking, that they have heard Darsh talking about Barzal in the press box above them and being critical of his coverage in the defensive zone to a point where they found out about it. And I know for a fact that it's just something that is real. I think maybe I'm being crazy, but
like sometimes you say things in the moment and I don't like, I think sometimes these GMs and whatever, if they think they're going to be honest and say things off the cuff. And I don't think, I know, I understand where you're going with that, but I don't, not that I wouldn't take it seriously, but I would take that line with a grain of salt. Cause it's like in the moment, maybe I had a lapse of judgment and made a bad play. And it's like, fucking goddamn it,
Barzal. I would also question the source's understanding of many things, but I will leave it at that.
Fair enough. When's the next On the Island coming out though? That's going to be good, man.
It's off the island. Actually, the firing of Wah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about Wah potentially, like, I was talking about this with my uncle yesterday. Wah potentially staying on as a scout, and the fact that was reported for Emily Kaplan. I honestly said, like, Wah, dude, come on. You got to have, like, a little more pride than that, bro. You're Patrick Wah. You're going to go from coach to scout in the same team?
Crazy. I thought Wah would – I was expecting more of him
If Wah becomes a scout for the New York Islanders after they fire him, he was never the right coach. Because the fact that he would just accept a role in scouting the same team that dropped him as a coach, that would be odd to me.
So
I think he'll land. Maybe he'll land somewhere.
Let's do this. Name one transaction that you think makes sense that has to be done in the offseason.
There's so many minor
ones. Minor. Just a minor one.
Well, Duclair is gone.
Duclair. Okay. I personally think that Cizikas probably should be traded this offseason, and it's because he had a good year. Richie eventually is going to have to play center. So I feel like Pageau can move back down to 4C, or even Richie can start at 4C. And then down the middle, you go Barzal and Horvat with those other centers, because that's the way it looks like DeBoer wants to go, right? So I just feel like this is the offseason. We're moving off of Cizikas. He's got limited trade protection.
Zero
trade protection. So that's a way to move off a player and just – open up a spot for some more youth in the lineup. Anything from you, Ethan?
Pelik's gone.
Pelik.
I think, again, you asked me what I think should be done and what will be done. I have little faith in the GM to do it, but he played excellent defensive hockey this season, but he is over 30. He finally stayed healthy for a season. We know he's got concussion issues. He's constantly banged up. And I'm sorry to say, modern day NHL, you could be as great defensively as Adam Pelik is, but if you could contribute zilch offensively, I think you're a limited player. And I do think that there would be some teams who would give up a nice asset or two to take on Pelech.
Yeah, I got a spot for Pelech. You know who would be a great fit? San Jose.
Yeah. They really have.
And like that's a team too that won't care about throwing a set like prospects around or high level picks around. They've had so many and they're kind of ready. And I don't know if you guys watched them at all. Over the last couple of weeks, I've caught them on NHL Network a couple of times.
Yeah, they could use Bellacom.
Like they're like Doug Waite. Celebrity at the top. Holy shit.
Yeah, they, it's bad.
I was wondering, I'm like, how are they not better? Like, they have so many fun young guys. They're a good team. And then I watch them, I'm like, they play no defense at all. It's actually crazy.
Best team that could use Peter DeBoer.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that's one transaction. What's one
too? Like we could keep going. Like, do you guys think Shabanov's back?
You know, I think that the coaching staff kind of took this kid in. He was a rookie this year, and rookies usually do go through a stage of the season where they're a complete zero, and like they need to be coached up. You need to live through it. And instead of trying to work through this guy's problems, I feel like they were so quick to just throw him on the bench and bring in Palat and bring in McLean. And it's like, okay, I get you guys are trying to win games, but we really just lost the plot this year of just trying to be super, super competitive. And at the end of the season, who scores a goal in a game you have to win? Shabanov does. And he was out there doing his thing against Toronto before he got hurt, which yes, it is a problem. And I don't know if he has a long-term future, but like we need to start giving these guys looks. And, you know, I want to make the playoffs as bad as anyone does, but like, at a certain point, like you got to try to compete to win championships. And like, if you're not going to try to develop anything internally and you're just every time that you're on this playoff line, you're just going to throw that all out the window. It's irresponsible, man. Should have coached him up more, should have given him more time. And I think he's on his way out the door.
He might be. And honestly, Jack, to your point of not just being at the line, becoming a contender and becoming getting to that next level, we know this organization, in order to do that, has to draft and develop. I mean, you look at their roster when they made their Eastern Conference Finals runs. It was almost all homegrown guys. And it wasn't necessarily high picks either. They, you know, guys they drafted, even Barzal. Barzal's a mid first, sort of where we're going to pick this season. Brock Nelson was a late first, sort of where the Colorado pick was going to be this season. All these guys, like Mayfield, our whole defense, Mayfield, Pelech, mid-round picks. Pulak, late first round pick. Lee, what was Lee? Fifth round. Cizikas, Martin. So many of these homegrown guys. So we know we're probably not going to become a destination that signs free agents until we build a really good core. And I think Darsh has to take a step back this offseason and realize that and understand this might be a slow burn. It's not just going to be something that just shows up and happens.
Yeah. Well said. Like re-signing Pageau the second after. You know, you trade for
despicable.
Shannon.
Despicable.
There's just a lot.
One of that, but that's why I agree even more with your Cizikas take, Jack. And I think it's so spot on. No trade protection, center. Been kind of declining, but yet still probably has value. Like
he does.
Cizikas getting, am I crazy to say like a third round pick from a good team?
I think that's a little crazy.
I don't think that's that crazy. 1 year left at a cheap hit for a team that's going to.
It'll be like a fifth.
He potted 10 goals in a role playing with McLean and Gatcombe this season, who are nowhere close to that production. He actually did have a pretty good season. And
honestly,
Scott Laughton go for what, like a second this year, or third?
Yeah. And I think Cizikas, if we move him, I think it's going to kind of be that like Parisi type situation where he goes, family stays back, and then he hangs it up after that year. Last year of the contract, I'm pretty sure he's got a young family. Probably not going to remove them from Long Island. So, but at the same time, it's business. That's the point. You got to do what's right for the team. I feel like we sometimes get so caught up on like, oh, this guy's a family. You can't trade that guy. You can't move this guy. Like treat it as a business. Move some of these guys. It's done. They're not winning with this group.
Yeah. And one thing too, I hope that the Islanders do not re-sign David Riddick and that they go maybe even trade for a goalie that can actually fully give them 30 to 40 games or something so that he could split his workload, because he is a great goalie. But when you ride him 10, 11 games in a row down the stretch, this is what's going to happen. Like it just kills me that they wasted that. He was so unreal this year, far and away the best goalie in the league. And you had 30 from Horvat, you had 70 from Barzal. All of these little things with health and performance from your high-end guys, and you still came up short. It's a scary realization. It really is. But at the same time, I expect to take it on the chin next year, honestly. And I think that this team, until they get Eklund up here, Yzerman, Aitchison, I think that it's going to be like this, where they're fighting to get into the playoffs with a coach trying to maximize the rest they have out of these veterans, because they don't want to do the full-blown teardown. And if that's the direction you want to go, fine. But no more half measures, where if you're going to trade your first-round draft pick, you trade it for some tangible players that will help down the line with goal scoring, defending, not guys that have playoff experience. It just can't happen. Cannot.
Right. And honestly, I don't see this team being in a position to trade first-round picks for quite a bit. No. Like this one, let's say it's 13, 14, 15. I don't know a player that's going to even be remotely available that I would trade that pick plus for. Like, you shouldn't be moving that pick at all. You need.
I think it's the opposite. That's not even a third of what's necessary to bring in a difference maker.
The pick you're saying?
Yeah.
No, and that's to my point. Like, we have a prospect pool right now that's solid. You have Eklund, Yzerman, and Aitchison. But guess what? One or two of them bust. Suddenly, we're banking on one guy in like an Eklund type guy. You need more than that. You need a group of like 10 young players that you could look at as these guys could potentially make a difference at the NHL level. And if you hit on half, it's great. Right now, we have three that we think are really good. There's more. I know some people in the chat, Danny Nelson, Quinn Finley, those guys too, sure. But those guys should be icing on the cake guys, not the guys that are
depend on
four pieces, at least not early on into their careers. If some of them hit, great. But that should be the Lee Cizikas types, that if they are a fourth, fifth round pick, I know Danny, I'm pretty sure Danny was a second.
Second.
But even so, if those guys hit, great. If your second round pick's a third line center, great. But we need core pieces. We need core pieces. If you're going to succeed here with Barzal and Horvat on the roster, you need to draft in the next couple years and hope those draft picks take over for some of these spots and can extend Barzal and Horvat's prime. If we're going to bring in – Braden Schenn does not extend Horvat and Barzal's prime. He depends on them to extend his prime, essentially. We need to bring in younger players that hopefully are part of Schaefer's prime in the 4 or 5 years and help Barzal and Horvat age. We constantly talk about Barzal and Horvat as the Ben and Sagan of the Islanders when we compare them into hopefully us becoming like the Dallas Stars. You don't become the Dallas Stars without draft and develop. You look at their team, Miro Heiskanen,
Jim Nilsson,
Wyatt Johnston, they had, and keep in mind, it doesn't just have to be guys you keep. Like, they were able to make a Rantanen trade because they had the proper prospects and the proper picks.
Exactly. And that's the problem. We're good.
This guy is not going to be good. This guy is not the greatest chance to make the roster. Like, we talk about Danny Nelson. Like I hope Danny Nelson's good and I'm high on him, but I see him as like a 3C. Danny Nelson's not a guy that's going to be the main piece for a Rantanen type trade.
So,
you need to
something, by the way, the all this up. Miko Rantanen trade, by the way, two first-round picks, Stankoven, two third-round picks. Anyone under any illusions that those fucking Stars picks are going to be top 10?
Well, the reality is the point we're making is we wouldn't be upset if we traded the first-round picks for players that are of that. Like, that's who you trade that.
Right. That's what I'm saying, Jack. The GM just lit a fucking Dallas Stars-worthy first, right? Like a 27, 28, 29 first on fire for Braden Schenn, when that's an asset that's good enough in a package
for
a Mikko Rantanen.
And here's my biggest issue with this season and how the deadline occurred. We constantly said this is an evaluation year. We just turned next year into an evaluation year too.
Yeah, we did.
That's my biggest issue.
Oh, yeah, because the GM misevaluated.
He misevaluated. Now we have to evaluate again. And we're so goddamn lucky that we got Schaefer, because if it wasn't for him, we'd be preying on McKenna right now.
Literally. Yeah, we're very.
And Ethan had this take from the beginning. This is, in all likelihood, going to be Sorokin's best season. And we just burnt it. And we got, and the whole thing with the Palat trade is, oh, we're getting a third. And the buyout's not that bad. And then you set that third on fire with Carson Soucy.
Yeah, and another thing with the Dallas Stars is like they want to add a veteran that's a good player. They throw a couple years and $3 million per at Matt Duchene, and he joins the team. That's how they do business.
If we were ready to go, like ready to win a cup, guys would come to us too. We're not. We're not even close.
Look at what the Carolina Hurricanes got out of Taylor Hall this year for less than what we paid Kyle Palmieri. 18 goals, 30 assists, 48 points in 79 games.
Yeah, guys overachieve on good teams.
Yeah, I mean, Palmieri's not my biggest issue at all. It's
well, you know what? Darsh is going to fucking pitch him as an improvement when we get a 35-year-old coming off an ACL.
Yeah, I want to hear your guys' opinion on this. Would you be okay if he just did a couple sell-offs, like you sell Duclair, maybe you sell Pellick, maybe a Cizikas, and then you just kind of ride out the rest?
No.
You make your picks. I wouldn't mind it because you know why? Because
they need to sell one asset that's going to get them like Pellick. More picks.
Pellick.
Oh, you said Pellick.
I said Pellick.
Oh, then yeah, I'm fine
Pellick,
with that.
Pellick, Cizikas, Duclair. Like if you trade those guys and then like maybe in the Pellick trade you get a prospect back that could sort of play now. Like if you're talking San Jose, I'm thinking like a Cagnoni, like that the young left-handed.
Luca, There's an Italian bias showing.
Yeah, that would be a nice like him plus a pick. Like I could see something like that. Like if you do that, and you're truly going to look at it as another evaluation season, and then yeah, maybe if they're kind of good, you could go and try to make a big ad. If they're
the
not,
the problem good, is though, Rocco. The problem is with that though is how okay are Barzal and Horvat another evaluation year? Because then you're having some hard conversations.
If you go into next year, and so much could happen between now and then, we don't know, but this is just discussion. If you go into next year and you're not good, that following offseason, there's going to be big conversations with those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know what? It's one of those things like, guys, if you're not into this, we got to move you. But I mean, I could see both those guys riding it out too. Like they've been here they've signed long term. They've been here for a while. I don't know. I could see it going either way. And honestly, I wouldn't mind those guys being our two vets to ride this thing out and hopefully jump back into things in the next 2-3 years. But I'd also understand on their ends if they're like, yeah, listen, like I have X amount of years left of my prime. It's not for me. Like even Lee, like I'm sitting there with our guys tonight from the Discord and we're watching Lee and we're literally all saying to each other like go chase a cup.
Yeah.
Like what do you need? Like I'm sure he loves Long Island and he's been a good captain and whatever else, but go chase a cup. Go do what Brock did. Like sign with Dallas or sign with Colorado or sign with Florida. Take a cheap deal, 1 year, 2 year deal, and just go sign with them and try to win. Like I appreciate his time here, but it's done. He should not be on this roster next year.
Do you think he is? I don't.
I actually don't. And Jack, I think your Stamkos comparison / take is spot on. I think that's like how Darsh going to play it. Like, see, well, we got rid of our captain and it's time to turn over a new leaf. I think
he's going to bring in Victor Hedman.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I could see if you move Pellick, whatever. How many years are left on Hedman, though?
I honestly don't know. Is he not a free agent? You'd have to trade for him.
Yeah, you trade. I think you'd get him for practically free. But
yeah, the UFA market is bleak this year. After Alex Tuch, I really don't know many players on it. I know Rasmus Anderson is on it.
If he's not looking good in Vegas, no thank you.
Yeah, it's.
I know you liked him early on in the year, Jack, but don't even think you would want him at this point.
Yeah, it's just not.
I mean, if he wants to sign like a 1-2 year deal to try to prove himself, maybe I'd consider it. Am I giving him like 7? Hell no.
I honestly just want them to add some youth on their right-handed defense pipeline here because I think that's got to be a priority in this offseason. You have nothing there. Like
I bring Tony back though. That's one thing I do for sure.
Yeah, I'd bring him back. It just it's a shame how he went out for a couple weeks and they collapsed. I mean, I can't even point to one thing that made this whole thing just fall apart. I think Sorokin playing 11 straight games or 13 or whatever, I think that might be the biggest factor. And just not surrounding the top guys with the help that they needed. I really don't know. The
thing is, Jack, like, how could you have surrounded them with enough help? Just this, like, there was nothing, and that was Darsh's mistake to even try. Like, there was nothing there.
Yeah.
There was nothing there. We said it from the beginning. If you're going to make the trade for a forward, we need a Kyrou or we need a Robert Thomas. You made the roster more redundant by getting Shin.
Yeah. Agreed.
Slow veteran that plays center sometimes. Great. We have like 20.
Do you guys have any candidates that could be maybe like a surprise, like more of a surprise this offseason? I said Barzal before. But there's other players on the roster that don't have trade protection. They're just maybe more.
I think you have to at least attempt to move one of the guys on the right side, like the Mayfield or Pulak. I think they both might have full, but I think you have to approach them and be like, listen, like we want to move you. Would you be willing to move anywhere? And I mean, I could see teams being interested in Mayfield. He has a very cheap cap hit. I think he's a fine bottom pair D. I think he would do really well on a really strong team. And I think you could move one of them and then go and try to sign like a Liljegren to like a 2-year deal as a stopgap guy, as you then hopefully draft right-handed defensemen and develop them. I know here, guy I'm really high on, Ryan Lynn, and we might actually be in his range now to draft him. Really talented right-handed defenseman in the Canadian junior. And there's going to be a number of right-handed defensemen. And there might even, you know, there might be a guy that slides to us that we're shocked doesn't go in the top 10. I mean, look at Victor Eklund. He slid to 16. Like, we could end up with another – that's the goal, right? End up with another Victor Eklund-level prospect. And then we're looking at this pool in a different light next year.
Yeah. So should we move to some Patreon questions?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. April 11th. Okay. Here we go. The Bry Man. Here's what I think. Trade one of Barzal and Horvat. Trade Pelech. Listen on Sorokin. Get a bunch of draft capital and younger established players. Build the right way. Please discuss. You guys can go first.
Into that. I think owner just finally sold a lot of season tickets and had things move in a positive direction sales wise. And I'd be shocked if they approved that full. That's a full rebuild, really. I mean, yeah. you'd get an insane amount back, but the odds of all that hitting and it working out in a great manner, I think, are like, you don't do all that in one off season. I don't think.
I disagree with it pretty heavily, because while I don't think the team is going to be great next season, you're going to have Yzerman, you're going to have Eklund, you're going to have the guys we mentioned before, maybe Danny Nelson, maybe Quinn Finley. Like, you're going to have all these prospects coming up at forward. And me personally, I want them surrounded by good players. And that's who I want their mentors to be. High-end players like Braden Schenn. Like Matt Barzal and Bo Horvat. Like, those guys are the guys you want around guys like Eklund, Yzerman. Like, you want these guys to come in and be effective right away. You don't just tear everything down.
You need to give them someone to play with. Like, this could – my issue is, if you fully tear it down around Schaefer, you could end up like Bedard in Chicago.
Yeah.
How long can you go on like that? Like, you can't go too long just being a shit team that never makes the playoffs. Like, obviously, we know – I think Bedard comes off his ELC this year, and obviously he'll sign a new deal there. But – if that continues throughout his next deal, like, he's going to start thinking about like, okay, like, I might need to go somewhere else here, because like, the clock's ticking. Once a guy's on his ELC, like, that are that like Schaefer level, Bedard level, Celebrini level, like, you only have so long before you have to get good, before the guy's going to get sick of being here.
You're right. And like, Bedard, to his credit, has held his own, but that's Connor Bedard. Like, and I love all the prospects we have, but like, those guys are not going to hold their own if they're completely all by themselves in all likelihood. So I do think
if you have the proper influx of youth, like, Schaefer's so good that if you have Barzal and Horvat still playing at a high level, and some of these young, like, Eklund's good, and then maybe in a couple years, if Aitchison hits or Yzerman hits, or we have another draft pick that's Eklund level, like, I think Schaefer's good to the point that he might will you into the playoffs some years.
Yeah.
So I don't think
he almost did it this year.
He almost did it this year, for God's sake. So if you actually have, like, you don't even have to have that crazy of a roster for Sorokin and Schaefer to will you to a playoff appearance, I don't think. Like, if you just have the proper players for DeBoer, I think they can make the playoffs next year. Even if you sell off some, like, say you sell off some guys, but you have a Pittsburgh Penguins-esque offseason where your pro scouting does a really good job and you find diamonds in the rough. That far-fetched that they can make it next year and turn around and be pretty good and set themselves up. But the idea is setting yourselves up and not giving away high-level assets. Like, your asset management this offseason is very key.
Yeah. The next question, Chris G., what can this team do this offseason that would actually set them up for the future?
I think we kind of discussed that, right? Like, maybe selling high on certain players, making some shrewd moves. And again, like I pointed to the Penguins just now, Anthony Mantha trading for Chinnikov. Like, you have to make some under the radar moves that boom.
Find value in players on other teams that are cheaper to acquire on the free agent market. And like a move like Chinnikov for the Penguins, like, that's really the best example right now, the most current one.
You know, what else, Jack? Good example. Yeah. Zegras with the Flyers. Like, trade for, like, buy low on a guy like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example. Great example. And like, maybe take a risk and you maybe sell one of your players high. You guys mentioned Pelech, and it just kind of sucks because I feel like if they did nothing, they would be perfectly fine. But the problem is now you have to trade one of your good players that will hurt you in the short term. And it never had to be like that. So it's just tough. It just really is tough. But
what was this, Pelech?
Let me look it 30? Up. 31. They're turning 32 in August.
Yeah, I think it's
– you know who I think could be that guy?
Who?
Underrated signing.
Who?
Eli Tolvanen.
Yeah, I like him.
Okay.
I like him.
Half-point-per-game player. I liked him as draft year.
I mentioned him before. I think a guy like Liljegren could be a nice add. Just as – not like he's going to be a core piece, but just like playing solid on that right side if you're able to move one of – Pulak or Mayfield and then Tony D, and that's your three on the right. Liljegren, Pulak, and Tony, like that. I think that could hold up okay. And then you get, and then the thing is, all you're giving up for a free agent is the cap space, and then you're getting assets for whoever you sell. So that's where Darsh could sort of play it smart.
What do you think? So the Florida Panthers are going to be pretty damn close, or they're going to be a bottom 10. They're going to be a lottery team this year. And I don't know, maybe if you can fill one of their needs that they need either at forward or on defense with any of the core players you have. I don't know.
Pelech's not fetching.
You want to say it. I see it in your face.
What?
You want to say Barzal.
Like, if they were to offer the number three pick, like, Barzal, just an idea.
Holy shit.
Like, no, I disagree with it. Like, I don't want to trade him. But I can see the GM doing some shit like that this offseason, and it does scare me once again. But not Barzal, but someone else. I don't know. There's no one else on our team. There's no one else on our team that would fill their need. But I do wonder if they would dangle that pick or if they're just going to draft.
I think Florida will. Florida's a win-now team. I think if – and that's a pick that – like, once you get – obviously there's the Ben Kindles of the world that could end up in the NHL right away, but – usually when you're picking 10, that's a guy that's not going to play for 2 or 3 years. So I could 100% see Florida moving that for the right player.
What if they offered you the 10th overall pick and you had to also send your first for this year and you had to send Simon Holmstrom?
No, you have to only move up three spots?
No, to move up like
– as of right now, I think
– just a 10th overall.
I thought that they were going to be like top – like, aren't they going to be like a top five pick?
I don't know. I don't know where they are exactly. And you got to see, and you never know till after the lottery. They have to be a top 10 to keep their pick. I know that.
They are
seven.
Yeah. So they'll probably keep their pick.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to get creative. He asked what would help for the future. I was just thinking. But Matt C, are we going to be the team good players shake free from this summer?
No.
Well, if my theory,
you're convinced Barzell's gonna, he's gonna do something crazy with Barzell.
Yeah, I am convinced. So yes, I will say
try
yes.
To speed to up these questions. We're going on an hour.
Say no.
Mark D20, is there a way to not move off Barzell, Sorokin, and Horvat and still pull off a relatively quick and successful retool? My brain says no. My heart says yes. The boomers say we can't do a full rebuild. The losing culture. We're never allowed to draft a superstar. What do you guys think?
I think you could, but you got to be.
I disagree.
You got to. Oh, you don't think they could do a retool without trading those guys?
I don't see a world in which they win a Barzell trade. The other two, I could maybe see it.
No, but he's saying, can you successfully retool while holding on to those guys?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it's possible.
I think it's possible. We just need to improve upon what we did this
year. I don't have other assets to retool with.
I think it's possible, but you have to not only stay the course and draft, you have to sell, like, seriously sell off basically everything.
That's not a retool. That's a rebuild.
No, it's not. If you keep Barzell, Horvat,
if you're saying like draft building through the draft, that takes like 5 years.
No, let me finish. If you have to sell almost everything else valuable around them and get picks and prospects, like not saying Cal Ritchie.
There's nothing else valuable around
guys
them.
That
Adam Pellick.
Pellick, you start with Pellick. You move Zizzy. And this is what I'm talking about. And then it doesn't have to be where every pick is making your roster or every pick is used. Some of them can be used that once you're ready and a little closer for that Rantanen-esque trade, because now you have enough assets and enough players in the pool.
But they don't have anything to get Rantanen-esque assets. They need two firsts, an A prospect.
You trade Pellick, you're already halfway there.
What are you getting for Pellick? The guy scores zero
points. If you get a first for Pellick.
One first. Okay. And then what else? They have nothing else to sell for first round picks.
Okay.
Besides those guys.
Two firsts, a prospect, and two thirds. If we trade for Pellick, we have all the picks, essentially.
Okay.
And then you just choose what prospect would be in that deal.
Maybe.
Off drafting off a couple years.
Also, keep in mind that Dallas had a ton of leverage.
Of course they had leverage. But I'm just saying, if we're comparing it just off assets, it's not that hard to have.
Chat doesn't think we're getting a first for Pellick.
I don't know. I think we could see it.
I think we would.
I wouldn't be surprised instead of a pick, it's a more ready prospect either, like I mentioned from San Jose.
Okay, next question. Do you guys feel moving off Lee, Cizikas, Duclair, and maybe Pellick/Pollock is enough to shake up the core, or are you listening on anyone besides Schaefer and Ritchie? I think moving off of those guys is enough of a shakeup, yes.
I think in the short term, yes, and then we got to see where it goes from there.
I'd listen on anyone.
What type, Josh Elkin, what type of trade would you move Sorokin in? Feels like he's almost untouchable by default.
You would need a premier, like, you would need a prospect that, not even a prospect, you need a young player that's, like, already really playing well in the league, I think. Like, yeah. at a premium position. Like a one center prospect. Like we'd have to have like Hage in this conversation from Montreal, or someone that high level, or someone already in the league that's established and looking really good already. I can't think of a like Porter Martone.
I don't think you're getting anything insane for.
But then you're not doing it, at least not
for Sorokin.
I don't think.
Keep in mind, like obviously the opinion of him has changed now, but the Bruins traded Vezina winner Linus Ullmark.
That was a system thing, though.
I'm just saying for Junis Korpisalo, who's ass. Mark Kastelic, never heard of him, and the 25th overall pick.
But wasn't he doing – didn't he get a new contract right after
that? Yeah, he did, and he's making Ilya Sorokin money right now.
Guys, I have a discovery. I have a discovery. Hear me out. So here's the top 10 goalies and goals saved above expected this season. Ilya Sorokin, Logan Thompson, Jeremy Swayman, Vasilevsky, Shesterkin, Wedgwood, Dobes, Cooley for the Flames, Greaves and Gibson, and then 11th is Spencer Knight. So when I'm looking at these goals saved above expected, building from the net out is kind of an old school way of doing things, and we are in a new age. And something I'm realizing right now is
goalie is the running back of the NHL, Jack.
Yes, and we have a lot invested, and he is worth a ton of trade assets, and I love Sorokin. I think he is.
I don't think he is for the exact reason you just said. It's an archaic way of building.
It is an archaic way of building.
I mean, they don't have a ton of assets, but imagine Edmonton could offer you a lot for Sorokin, right, and how much they'd get. Yeah. It depends on all it takes is one team.
Yeah.
There's a ton of non-playoff teams with great goalies, and I don't think that's by mistake. I think that's because they're investing in the wrong parts of their team, and I think that, you know, if you want to get creative, that's something to entertain, but I understand if people say I'm crazy because obviously he's an all-world player.
Jack, you're right, because the way the league is built now and the way the rules are set, it's meant for goals to be scored.
Barry Trotz made an Eastern Conference Finals with Thomas Greiss and Robert Leonard. So,
yeah. So that's our answer, Josh. Nortz, is Matthews really available this summer? In a pure fantasy dream world, what would it take to get him? How would you do it, dude?
I think he very likely could be available. I don't think he'll be available for us.
Yeah. No,
I don't think he's moving this summer.
I could see another year, but I think he's one of those guys, whenever he does move, there's like that select group of teams. And he's also a West Coast guy. So,
prospect question from the Bry Man. Who are we aiming for at 13 or 14?
I mentioned before Ryan Lynn. I really like.
Rocco hates everyone that's outside the top two, so.
I don't hate everyone outside the top two.
Rocco hates everyone outside the top two.
But some people don't even think Stenberg will go to anymore. If you listen,
that's crazy.
To Cam and Chris, our guy Chris, that has been a guest a couple times on Called Up Podcast. Very good pod for any prospect people.
Good shout here, Josh. This is correct.
Yeah. So I was right. Ethan was wrong. Thank you, Josh.
We'll see.
Prospect at what was it at 13? Ryan Lynn, I really like. I could see a world where Viggo Bjork drops because of his size, and I would certainly take a flyer on him.
Just what we need, more midget Swedes.
All right. and again, we need more talent. That's what we constantly talk about. And to go more towards your size route,
Ethan Belchetz.
But you know what? He's got a lot of question marks, but that's, again, we're at 13, so you could take a flyer on a guy that's maybe
big dropped. Boy. We got the Caps rolling out 700-pound lines, and we're drafting 5'10 Swedes.
Yeah, I would have to look at the list a little deeper, but that's off the top of my head. Lynn, York, if he drops, Belchetz. So I highly doubt he drops to us, but maybe there could be a world where Tynan Lawrence falls a little bit. Although everyone loves to draft centers high, maybe it's a Lawrence, maybe an Oscar Hemming, who I really like at a big boy out of BC. There's going to be a number of good players we're going to have the shot at. So although the end of the season sucks, it is exciting to look at it draft-wise, and I'm sure I'll be doing some mocks with Prospect Don and Mark D.
Scuds, any chance they bury Palat in Hamilton, or is Darsh too big of a coward? They're just going to buy him out.
Buyout's not that bad. Buyout's not that bad. That's why the trade was okay. Buyout's not that bad.
Sam, give
Cap's going up.
Cap's Sam, going up. Buyout's not that bad.
And Sam wants three reasons for hope. One, number 48.
Yes. Baker. You ever see that? Jack, you don't remember this, but there was an old Chappelle skit. Five best rappers of all time. Dylan, 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 Dylan. It's just Schaefer, Schaefer, Schaefer for those three, I think.
Schaefer.
All three.
The prospect pool and the new head coach. Those are the three I got for you. Sure. Ethan Kay, which loss was the turning point of the season?
Chicago, or was that too late? Can we say maybe Ottawa? I think when they gave up that late goal, I feel like that took a lot of juice out of them.
I've got another answer, and it's the right answer, I think.
What is it?
8-3 Penguins.
Oh, was that? I was at that game, I think.
They lose 8-3 to the Penguins, and then they lose 4-3 to the Sabres back to back.
Yeah,
They lose to the Flyers, then they lose to the Hurricanes. So it's four in a row.
The fact that there's so many options tells you.
Yeah,
the turning point of the season was when they traded for Braden Schenn at the trade deadline.
So they were 7-3 against Montreal.
Those games were the
Ethan had the right answer and then reeled off five more.
Yeah, just
I'm
the deadline.
I'm pre-sick right now, not to make excuses, but
can the director of player development fix Schenn next year? From David S.
No.
No.
And also, he's fired.
Yeah, he is fired, actually.
It was a one-year role.
Yeah, he's back to Cairns we go. But Barry Teabags, if you had two options, which would you choose? One, trade this year's first-round draft pick for a player like Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou, or Jason Robertson.
They can't do that.
Two, trade this year's first-round pick to move down in the first round and also gain another second- or third-round draft pick.
Well, because the Thomas or Kyrou trade would be well beyond just that pick, and we now don't have a lot of those picks, the second one's much more realistic. And I could already hear Darsh justifying it by, well, you know, that third we gave up in the
show. We got it back.
We just got it back for trading down and getting a worse player in the draft. Thank you.
And the PR.
And then the Kimber media machine. Everyone at the same time is going to tweet, tidy work from Darsh.
Yeah, it's oh, man. Steve, 1473, which team from the East and West would you not mind seeing go on a run? I'd go with Utah and Buffalo.
Buffalo. I'm low-key rooting for Buffalo. Like that, I feel like that city – I've never even been there, but I feel like that city deserves it. West Coast – can't say Utah because it still bothers me they moved from Arizona.
I have an answer for both. West, definitely Minnesota. I respect the hell out of Bill Guerin for just saying, fuck it, get me Quinn Hughes. And we have some questions, but they have two freaking elite players and three with Boldy now. He's really sick. Yeah.
I have a question for you guys on Boldy that I was asked today quickly. If you could only take one to add to the Islanders, Boldy or Caulfield?
Caulfield.
I think, have you looked at Boldy's numbers?
He's nuts. He's insane. He had like 40 and 40.
Boldy for sure.
Bro, Caulfield 50 goals.
Yeah, Boldy's got 40 and kills penalties.
40 plus assists and he's big. I'm surprised.
He kills penalties.
Oh, you can't draft Ego Bjork. He's a midget. And then you want Caulfield.
Yeah, but Caulfield's proven.
Typical Ethan Double standard.
Yeah, for me, it's Boldy, but definitely the Wild from the West and from the East, actually Ottawa.
You guys both picked the wrong one from the West. The correct answer from the West is the Ducks.
Yeah, I like the Ducks.
Isn't
the West still open? Like, there's a number of teams that could still make it.
Hold on, let me check the games.
I think we would have won the Pacific this year, for God's sake.
The Kings, Predators, Jets, and Sharks are alive, but mathematically only the Predators and Kings are fighting it out for that last spot.
Oh, wow, dude. The Kings are down 3 points with a game in hand to the Ducks for the third spot.
Yeah,
and the Oilers. Oilers and Ducks both have 90 points, 80 games played. That's tight.
It is tight.
I agree with you. I agree. I think Ducks. Ducks would be fun. I like.
I'm picking Washington in the East.
I look at the Ducks roster. That's what we got to try to build, man. Look what they have.
Ottawa for me. Ottawa for me in the East and Minnesota in the West. If the Predators get in, I'll always root for Trotz's team, but I don't think they're going to.
Trotz's team for very long anyway.
Yeah.
K-Mac, what the Islanders should do is obvious to most. Sell off all pieces of this core and start fresh, but what they will probably do is what they will do will probably be different. What do you guys think the team will actually do this offseason?
Nothing crazy.
I think he'll sell off pieces, but annoyingly, like, then flip them for win now, guys.
I think they're going to trade Barzal for like a massive haul. They're going to utilize some. They're going to get a lot of draft capital back and like one pretty good, like one probably lower end top six player that's not as good, but somebody that is a good player. And I also think that they're going to use those draft picks on like the guys that we need, right? Like right-handed shot defensemen. I think that Lee's going to walk. I think that they're going to figure out how to trade off guys like Engvall and Duclair, guys that won't play another minute for this team.
Do you even need to trade Engvall at this point? Can't you just keep burying him? Yeah, why would you pay a price to trade him? I feel like it's just better to bury him.
Yeah, I don't really know what their plan is there, but that's my bold thing. I think they're going to do that this offseason, and I think they do keep Horvat, and I think they make him the captain.
I just think if you trade Barzal, like, if you're going to trade one, like, if you're going to trade Barzal, you might as well trade the others at that point, in my mind. Because then you're going, especially your homegrown guy, like the let's be real, he was the face before Schaefer got here. Like, he was the exciting guy to watch play.
Yeah, I just feel like they've done a lot this year to just imply that they're pushing him out. Nortz, I know the pick is the smart and right play, but if the trade option comes that someone fits Schaefer's timeline and you have to include the pick, do you do it?
Depends exactly who it is.
Yeah. It's not going to happen.
It's a 20-year-old guy that's already in the NHL and he looks really good, sure. If it's like a sure thing to be better than, or at least what we'd expect out of the 13th overall, sure. But
Steven,
we're going to stick and pick, I think.
Steven B9, second to last question. What's your guys' gut feeling? Lee goes, I have a feeling he honestly is gone, especially since Darsh was part of the Stamkos being let go. Gives some hope. He'll let go from the captain. The time's come. I think he's gone. I've said it for months.
I think he's gone too.
Nortz, last question. Is it a crazy take to say that the rookie general manager nerves / expectations caused Darsh to make the Shen trade? I feel like this was his second year. If this was his second year and he saw nobody big getting moved, he wouldn't have pulled the trigger. I always go back to Buffalo, how they were a second away from trading for Parayko and Thomas. But when that fell through, they were like, all right, we got to get something. When they just send like a second and third for these two huge defensemen from Winnipeg and are like, all right, this is all we got. And that's an experienced GM not panicking. So I do think that the lack of experience hurt Darsh here.
No, I don't give him that excuse because
he got rope-a-doped.
Yeah, you're one of the 32 GMs in the National Hockey League, and you worked for a franchise that was a cup-winning team back-to-back years and has made multiple shrewd moves, and then you leave with that degree, and then you do this. So, no, I don't give him
that. Yeah, I think it's more likely than not that his job in Tampa was asking Brisbois if he wanted milk or sugar. And then on top of that, he got rope-a-doped. Armstrong said, here's this god-tier price for the guys that you want, but I'll just take a first for Braden Shen. And he got.
And a third.
Yeah.
And a goalie prospect who some people will tell you is really good.
Yeah. All right. Should we wrap this up?
Wrap it up.
All right. This sucks, but we did it. And we'll continue to be here into the off-season. Sign up for the Patreon. Join the Discord. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around.
Ayo's house,
in the middle of our street.
Ayo's house.